Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello everybody, welcome back to The Shift. So today's episode we actually recorded nearly like a month and a half ago when we came back from Ireland. So we had a great chat with Thomas Whitfield. We talked about sexual education, STDs, he gave us some great love advice. We spoke about porn. At one stage we talked about how to clean your vagina. So it's very interesting and a lot of fun. Thomas Whitfield is really great and I'm so glad we got him on. He actually created these sex education videos that he was inspired to create after he taught sexual education for adults. So the start of this episode, he's a little cut off, but that's what he starts speaking with. So he was talking about how he was teaching this sex education and he didn't realize how much people didn't know, and then that's how he ended up making these YouTube videos called Shit They Won't Tell You in Sex Ed. So yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode and I will talk to you again at the end. Thank you so much.
Found that in, you know, teaching that for a couple semesters, I was really surprised at like the stuff that people don't know about sex that's just kind of basic. And I thought, well, I mean, I need to do something about this. I want to do something about this. And I have a background in film and entertainment. And I was like, I'm going to make a YouTube channel where I can address a lot of the stuff that comes up that like isn't in the textbook or that people just don't know.
Right. And but you are you're doing a doctorate in psychology, right?
Yes.
That focuses on sexuality.
Yeah. So I'm.
So you're not just a random dude. That's.
Right. Yeah. No. So I have some background there. I'm
like us.
Yes,
right.
I was literally thinking that.
Not like two people with literally no qualifications whatsoever talking about sex to Irish people.
Right. So I have a master's in psychology, a master's in philosophy, and I'm getting my PhD in health psychology and clinical science. So it's kind of the intersection between health and psychology, and the focus of all of my research is human sexuality, specifically HIV and STI prevention. So really that health aspect of sex.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely want to talk to you about that. But just to, in terms of the stuff that was coming up when you were doing the class that you thought, oh, I'm gonna do videos about this. What were some of the immediate ones that you said, my God, more people need to hear about this in terms of subjects?
Yeah, kind of. So I want to say everything. A lot of people not knowing the difference between HIV and AIDS. A lot of people wanting to understand why they date the people that they do. That comes up all the time. Like, I keep getting in these really unhealthy relationships, but I think that everyone that I'm dating is completely different. Why does this keep happening? And these are the types of questions that come up in a college class.
Wow.
And there is some research to back up a lot of those questions, but that's stuff that's not covered in the textbook.
Really? So is there actually research covering like cycles of behavior and picking your partner?
I mean cycles of behavior, yes. Learning theory, yes. Attachment theory, attachment having to do with like who are the people that we become attached to as adults based on how we were raised as children. Like, there's a ton of literature around those issues. So I wanted to find a way that I could take like the scientific literature and sort of water it down and provide it to people in ways that would be digestible, that they would actually be able to use to help themselves.
Right. And in terms of that subject, because that's a good one, it comes up a lot. Are you like, I think you've said it. I've certainly noticed it in myself, this sense of why do I always end up with a certain type of person? Or
it's you.
It's you.
It's me. It absolutely is.
It's not bad luck.
No, I'm kidding. Well, no, it's funny though, because in every single relationship that you are in, you are the only person that is in all of those relationships. Like, you are the common denominator. So if every relationship that you're at, that you're in ends up going exactly the same way, like, it's you. You are picking the people that you're dating.
And is there a few, like, common things that come up all the time? Is it usually a relationship with a parent or abuse or...
I mean, usually abuse and the relationship with the parent are pretty intertwined. Right. Most people that are abused, like, it's usually coming from the parent, at least in the beginning. I do think that a lot of it has to do with the relationships that we have with our parents, because the households that we grow up in are the households that we tend to make as adults, because that's what feels like home to us. So, like, if you're used to a lot of fighting going on in your house, you're probably going to have a lot of fighting when you become an adult. Or if you see a lot of love in your house, like, you're going to gravitate towards that as an adult, because those emotions that you're used to are the emotions that you're comfortable around. So even if it's like a negative emotion, like anxiety or fear, that's what you're going to gravitate to as an adult, because that's what you're comfortable with, that's what you're used to. So part of, like, dating new people or different people than you're used to is forcing yourself out of your comfort zone to, like, date people that make you feel a little bit different. And I want to say uncomfortable, but, like, not scared. Like, don't go on a date with someone that you're, like, afraid of or that you think is going to, like, physically hurt you, but, like, someone that makes you nervous. Like, that's fine. Maybe it's that you're nervous that this person is nice to you and you're used to people being mean to you.
No, I totally agree, because it only took me recently to realize that I dated mean and angry and kind of abusive men just because that's what I... not from my father. My father's amazing, but my mother was definitely an angry person. I saw that growing up, so it's actually, I can deal with that easier. I can deal with people shouting at me than being nice to me. So it took me only recently to kind of go out of that circle. But yeah, it was me finding it more comfortable to date men like that. So totally relating to what you're saying right now.
and it's great that you could notice it, and it's difficult to notice that you are in a pattern that leads you to dating the same type of person. And that's also great that you're able to kind of, like, focus it and be like, oh, I'm doing this because I'm comfortable with it.
But here's the thing, though. How do you stop yourself from, so say, like, hypothetically, you meet somebody and you immediately like them, and you think to yourself, oh, this is the one, even though probably you're going to end up in the same situation. It's not like when you meet somebody, you say, here we go again with another whatever. Mm. You know, the comfortability of it is like, oh, this is the type of person that I like. And it's only after you get to know them that it reveals itself.
Yeah, because it does take a little time. That's a really good point.
So I agree with it and I disagree with it.
Let me just add one thing, sure. Which is kind of not really comedy, but I always think if I like them, that it's a problem. That actually what I need to do is push past my lack of interest and probably find somebody that won't make me unhappy, which is semi a joke, but semi true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Most comedians, as I'm sure you know, like, there's truth in all of the jokes that they tell, like, that's why they're funny. I'm like comedy splaining.
that's absolutely fine. They don't have a network of people that talk about how that's unacceptable just yet.
It's coming, though. I'm gonna start it.
Are you
tweet me?
You're mansplaining comedy to me.
So I think that, you know, first off, we all have this idea that there is the one, which I just think is bullshit. I do not believe in a one for anyone. I think that you find people that you like and you make it work. And I don't think there's going to be, like, one person that just meets every possible thing on your list that you could ever want. It's just unrealistic. And I think that that leads to a lot of devastation and disappointment, because we carry around these ideas of who people are supposed to be, or who we're supposed to be with, or who we're supposed to be at all times. But to get back to directly back to what we were saying, so you go on a date with someone, you think maybe, like, they're the one, you're attracted to them because you're used to this cycle of feeling, and I think that you have to question it. Especially if you're someone that meets someone and right away you're like, oh, I'm enamored by them, I need them. Why? What is it about them? What are you telling yourself? What are you actually seeing? And what are you ignoring? I know that in every bad relationship that I've been in, and I've been in a lot of them, there have been things that I've purposely ignored because I didn't want to fucking see it.
So true. The older you get, it's like you choose to ignore the red flags where before you couldn't see them, but then you're older, you're like, oh fuck it, I'll just look past the alcoholism. Or you're right, you're definitely, oh god.
Did this get too deep, too quick?
I'm gonna die alone.
Maybe, but that's okay.
I guess. No, I want love. Anyway,
you know, it's funny because doing therapy, a lot of the people that come to therapy, I mean, the vast majority of it has to do with relationships. Right. Either they want a relationship, they want out of a relationship, or they're just discontent. And a lot of it is people coming in and being like, why don't I have a partner? Why don't I have a boyfriend? Why don't I have a girlfriend? I need to be with someone. I want to be with someone. And they just see it as this thing that they have to have to be happy.
Yes.
So they almost like come to therapy wanting me to tell them why they are not with someone, as though I'm going to be able to look at them and be like, oh, there's this huge thing that's wrong with you. You need to fix this. And then all of your dreams are going to come true.
Here's the mirror. Have a look. Be honest with yourself.
Right.
I'm just kidding. That would be quite cruel. So that comes up a lot. Like, why do I end up in cycles? Was there any other sort of buzz, you know, things that jumped out from that class that made you say, I'm going to do these videos?
People ask, so a lot of stuff around STIs and HIV all the time, because I think that people that, so not everyone had sex ed. Like, the sex ed in the United States is shitty. Okay, I don't know what it's like in Ireland.
Just to tell you that it's almost non-existent.
Yeah,
it's okay. In recent years, there's been some, but still would be probably inferior to anything you've come across. Well, it certainly would be inferior to the majority of stuff you've come across in your research here in the United States. But the majority of Irish people, except for maybe the more recent generation, hardly had any at all.
Also, it hasn't changed in 20 years. Whatever they're using is the same. So... exactly what Des said. Like, we had one, but it was nothing about STDs or anything like that.
Yeah, so ours here is different state by state. There's no, like, federal mandate. I believe that there are 13 states in the U.S. where the sex ed that you're provided has to be medically accurate. There are states where they can literally tell you, like, abstinence. You can get AIDS from a toilet seat. Or oh, from right. a straw. Like, it doesn't have to be medically accurate at all. Mm. There are two or three states where the only time that you're allowed to talk about any type of sex that isn't heterosexual is if it's in the context of HIV or AIDS.
That's the only way you can say.
Yeah. There are a few states where legally you're not allowed to talk about homosexuality unless it's in a negative way.
Right. Jesus. So there is this other way of doing it, but just so you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to kill you.
Yes, jeez. And God will hate you, or you'll go to hell. Like, yeah. I mean, anything like that.
Yes.
So there, like, sex ed in the United States is terrible. And a lot of stuff around STIs and HIV that people are taught when they do have sex ed is like, these are gross. You don't want to get them. Look at these disgusting photos. Ew, if you have sex, you're going to get that, and then no one's going to want to be with you. Mm. And that's such a disservice. So, I mean, I don't think there's anyone that's like, yeah, I want to get an STI. Like, that would be fun. But when you're talking to younger people or a diverse group of people, like, they are the highest at risk for things like STIs. And if you're telling them they're discussing if they get one, they're not going to get tested.
That's right, the fear is too
high.
If
they do have something, they're not going to go get it looked at. And they're not going to tell their partners because they've already been so stigmatized and shamed about it. So that just becomes this cycle. So I make sure that when I talk about things like STIs and HIV, that it's done in a very affirming way.
Yes, and also without the shame, right? That, like, it's not the end of the world if you have one. Don't have any fear about going to get checked. Don't have any fear about talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And I tell them where you can go get tested in the city. I tell them exactly what testing looks like, how the different ways are, what they're checking for when they do things, what questions should they ask.
I think that's great. The first time I got tested was here in America, which means
really
I didn't get tested until I was 26. So that was terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to be honest, I think the conversation I think the conversations around STDs in Ireland aren't great either. I mean, I don't think there's a real positive conversation happening amongst people of you have to get tested on the regular. I mean, it would definitely have been a thing I've noticed over here that people discuss testing more casually here. Although I'm sure you would do research across the whole country as variations. But in New York City, I find people are way more open about it. Going to get tested, not a big deal. In Ireland, there's still a thing where you have to go to, like, the sexual health clinic to get tested to a degree. Whereas here, it's just like you go to your local doctor, get a test, no big deal.
Yeah, I think that people here in New York specifically are much more open about going and getting tested because, I mean, we have ads for testing everywhere. It's on the subway. It's just anywhere that you look, you can see something about STDs or STIs and getting checked. So I do think that, you know, there's a lot less stigma for it here. And the sex education specifically in the city is much better.
And yeah. So how do you tell people, say somebody's listening right now, and, you know, they're definitely, you know, they've had some unprotected sex, they've never been tested, and the main reason why they're not going is because they're freaking out and they don't want to find out almost. It's kind of easier not to go. What do you say to those people?
Everything is treatable. No matter what you have, if you have anything, it is treatable, and the quicker that you go and get checked out, the easier it is to take care of.
Right. So, like, you know, obviously people say, yeah, but herpes is for life.
I mean, herpes is for life, but there's a medication that you take daily so you don't have outbreaks. It's suppression therapy. The chances of you passing it on to your partner are very low.
It's Valtrex, only because it came up in our podcast earlier, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I didn't know what that was. I didn't even know about herpes till I came over here. I don't know who I'd be hanging out with when I was younger.
Wow.
But I never heard of herpes till I came over here.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'm still, to be honest, I'm still not even really sure what chlamydia is. I went and got tested for all the stuff and I don't have it, but I'm still like, yeah, I could do with a sex education class for sure on all of it. I just found out you could get herpes on skin contact. I didn't know that. I thought it was only true, like, sperm and vaginal stuff. I didn't think, I'm still very confused on all STDs, and I'm 28, so...
It must have been terrifying for you when you went to get tested for the first time.
It was, because the doctor said chlamydia, yes, whatever, yes, whatever, yes. And I thought he was telling me I have it, but he was telling me, no, I've checked for it. So I was like, no!
What a hole for a...
But I also got a herpes.
That's awesome. That is so funny.
I got a herpes scare. I think that's what made me do it. But what happened was...
So what's a herpes scare?
Well, this is for the women out there, because you know that you actually really shouldn't use body shower cream in your vagina, but nobody ever told me that, because it's a self-cleaning organism, so you really shouldn't. It's actually better for you. It's healthier if you don't, like, go too much down there. Okay, so
wait, hang on. No. I have a question. Are you, like, putting soap on your fingers and then inserting your fingers?
No, not
like,
in my badge.
It's not lube.
Not in my badge, but just around there. You're okay. Better off, like, as less as possible. But anyway, I'd gotten a new shower cream and I had put it down there, and then I had a reaction and I thought it was herpes. And before I even went to Planned Parenthood, I called my stepmom and told her I have herpes. And she was like, okay, it's fine, we'll deal with it, don't worry about it. And then I went and it was fine, and the doctor was so nice and she laughed a little and she was like, no, you just had an allergic reaction. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, in your story, it's so funny for you to point out that, like, just with how shielded everyone is, like, you weren't even sure what the appropriate way was to clean your own body. Mm-hmm. Because you were so, like, sheltered from, it sounds like, any information about sex, which is also, like, you know, it's not just sex with other people, it's our own bodies and understanding mm-hmm. those. And, like, that's sad. Like, people should know more about their bodies, and people don't tell them because they're ashamed or don't want them to be naked.
Yes.
Or
yes. And I think it's important, like, my stepmother now with my brothers and sisters is amazing, and they're getting, but I didn't grow up in that environment. I grew up where it was like, you didn't talk about this stuff. Masturbation was dirty. I got accused from a young age of, like, oh, you'll be pregnant by the time you're 15, or, oh, I bet you'll become a lesbian, as if that was a bad thing. Like, really. So it was a very repressed. So I think that's only coming to America. And, like, obviously, if I had grown up more with my stepmom, that'd be great. But she's a social worker. So just, yeah, parents, talk to your children. Don't.
By the way, just since it's come up, what is the proper way to clean your vagina?
Well, apparently you should just actually use water that because it's a self-cleaning organism, it already has the healthy bacteria there, and that'll actually stop a lot of the smelling or like weird discharge. You're not actually meant to put any products down there, just around the flappy areas.
Flaps came up in our last podcast. We ended up on a little bit of a riff about the fact that there's not as many nicknames for vaginas as there are for penises. So we're a flap friendly podcast.
I like the word flappy.
I mean, I think Flappy is a hilarious name. I mean, it reminds me of that bird calls... game on like the iPhone, but just like a flying vagina.
That's what she calls her vagina. Oh, Flappy. Flappy's hungry.
Oh my god.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm kidding. We're actually quite we care about people. Our jokes aren't always as bad.
I don't know what you're talking. I got so lost.
We're talking about your vagina, Flappy.
Oh, my vagina.
When you do the videos, you do stuff about STI and education, and then in terms of HIV, aren't you focusing, part of your PhD is on HIV and PrEP?
Yes. So the vast majority of my research is on pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, which most of the people listening to this probably have no idea what that is. Mm-hmm. It is a pill that you take once a day if you are HIV negative, and it stops you from becoming HIV positive. So if you are someone who is at risk for becoming HIV positive, you just take this pill and it basically makes it impossible for you to become positive. I think that there have been maybe two cases in the entire world where someone has still seroconverted, so gone from HIV negative to HIV positive while being on the medication, but it's over 99% effective when taken daily. And it's been available in the United States since 2012, and people do not know about it.
But how much does it cost, and how, because I know that what it is like in Ireland, but can you answer in America, how much is it expensive every month?
I'm not even sure if it's available in Ireland.
It is, but it's a version of it, and it's €80 a month.
So in the United States, if you do not have insurance, it can be up to $13,000 a year.
Oh my god.
So it can be over $1,000 a month.
Oh my god.
If you don't have insurance, and you also have to go to your doctor every 3 months to get testing, to get a new prescription. So if you don't have insurance, you have to pay again for STI testing every 6 months, an HIV test every 3 months, and just the doctor's appointments, and then the prescription on top of it.
And is it a daily pill?
It is a daily pill. So it can be extremely expensive. However, if you live in like a major metropolitan area like New York City, you can get it for free.
Wow. Okay.
So there are tons of places where you can get it for free. So if it's something that you want to go on, go to preplocator.com. You can put in your zip code and it will tell you what places in your area have it. And you will most likely, I mean, if you can even find like a Planned Parenthood, they often have it on like an income-based scale. So you can find it in a anywhere pretty much that is affordable. There are even places online where you can do all the testing online and send everything in, and then they send you the pills. But yeah, I mean, PrEP is really amazing, and the people that I see that it benefiting the most are, you know, people that are in serodiscordant relationships. So if you're in a relationship where one of you is positive and one of you is negative, like, you can have sex and not have to worry about becoming HIV positive. Or if you are a sex worker, so, but it's pretty much recommended for anyone who is engaging in sex without condoms with people of which their HIV status they don't know.
Yeah,
because there was an article in the Irish Times yesterday that there's been a massive increase in HIV positive diagnoses in Ireland in recent times. In fact, apparently it's higher than at the peak of the AIDS epidemic, quote unquote. I don't know what the proper way to talk about that is in terms of a timeline, but it is a problem in Ireland, increasing, and a real increase in heterosexual people being diagnosed with HIV.
It was 33% and 53 is gay bisexual. 33 was heterosexual.
Wow, that's very different than the stats here.
We're also quite high in Europe. It was 10.2 for every 100,000, and it is 6 for every 100,000, and is the average for Europe. So it's quite high now.
Yeah, and wow. You can only sort of assume the reasons, but I guess it's just whatever the reasons are, it's important not to get it out there. if people are having unprotected sex, that the risks are high. Because I'm sure you found this, that people have started to fear it less in recent years, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. 100%. Actually, my dissertation focuses on cognitive and affective differences in risk perception as a predictor for going on PrEP. So, because what we've found in research is that, like, one of the biggest predictors of beginning a PrEP regimen is believing that you're at risk for HIV, which makes sense. You're not going to, like, go to your doctor and talk to your doctor about blood pressure medication if you don't think you have high blood pressure. So you're not going to go to your doctor and talk to him about going on PrEP if you don't think you're at risk for HIV. But people have a tendency to estimate their risk as being much lower than it actually is, because right. they think things like, oh, that's not going to happen to me. I'm not someone that would get HIV, or that person that I'm having sex with doesn't look like they have HIV.
Yes.
But then if you were to, there's research that shows that then if you were to say, like, hey, this is person B and they're having sex with person C, like, what do you think their risk is? And they're like, oh, their risk is really high. But if you exchange it in with, oh, this is you and this is person C, they're like, oh, no, there's no risk.
Oh, interesting. So when it relates back to themselves, they automatically downplay the risk.
Yep.
And as well, like, I think as well, a lot of people don't realize that even with oral, a friend of mine said she'll hold off sex just to not get STDs, but she'll always blow some. And I was like, you can still get it. So that's like an interesting thing as well that people my age don't even realize.
What about, is it easy to transfer HIV with oral sex?
No.
Oh, okay. Slow. Never mind. Okay, so
but STIs, yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
STIs, you can. So actually, when you get tested, you can ask them to swab anywhere that you are putting something inside you. So you can have them swab your throat, you can have them swab your butt, because you can actually carry certain bacterial STIs in those areas without it coming out in like a urine sample. So if you are doing a lot of oral sex, like, you could absolutely be carrying like gonorrhea or chlamydia in your throat and giving it to other people without knowing it.
Right.
That's, I love that, terrifying. You both look like,
I was like, oh my God, I need to go get, like, my throat swabbed.
No, I just get tested on the regular. Okay.
I need to go get tested again.
But sorry, just because while we're talking about PrEP, why do we not now say everyone who's single and is having casual sexual encounters or encounters with people who, like, why don't we everyone just take PrEP?
So, I mean, so part of it has to do with the barriers. It can be expensive. Not everyone has insurance here.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that is a huge barrier. People don't have insurance, can't afford it, don't know where to get it. Depending on where in the country you are, people will not want to prescribe it to you. So it's heavily prescribed to gay and bisexual men. They're mm-hmm. at the highest risk for HIV in the United States. And there are a lot of places in the country where a doctor's like, I don't feel comfortable prescribing that. If I prescribe you that, I'm telling you that, you know, you don't have to use condoms. And I think you should use condoms instead.
Yes.
So there's some, you know, religious bullshit about, I don't want to prescribe that to you. And it is a strong medication. There can be side effects.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, we don't know what the long-term side effects are. It hasn't been around long enough. Like all new medications, like, we don't know what's going to happen long-term.
Long-term side effects apparently are that you look back in your life and think it was fucking really fun. That was one of the side effects I heard.
And I'll be devil's advocate here and say that I probably wouldn't take it because of what you just said. I also don't take the pill either because I don't like putting anything into my body. So there is going to be people like me who aren't going to want to take something that they don't know. Saying this, I smoked cigarettes for 10 years, but, you know, so I'm a hypocrite, but still, I would be terrified of what you just said, that you don't know what the long term, like, I hate even putting the pill in my body because I'm like, I don't know what the effects are going to be long term.
Yeah, and I hear you. And that's one of the really important reasons that, you know, PrEP is for people that are at risk of HIV. Because if you happen to get HIV, the medications that you're going to take for the rest of your life are going to have very long term side effects.
Yeah.
That are worse than PrEP. Although PrEP is made up of a type of HIV medication, but people are generally, you know, not, people are generally not going to go on PrEP for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, until the end of their life, as you would with HIV medication. So, I mean, it's important that you are someone who's at risk when you're taking it, because you don't want to just be putting things into your body yes. that you don't need. But people also, like, they know if they're engaging in risk or not. There might be some cognitive dissonance of saying like, oh, it's not going to happen to me. But if you logically look at your behavior, you can tell if you're engaging in risk or not, and if you're someone that it would be good for. And people go through different, it's actually referred to in literature as seasons of risk. So people go through different periods where they engage in more risk. Mm-hmm. So PrEP might be good for someone who is engaging in a lot of risk for 3 months and then wants to stop it. Like, it doesn't have to be a forever thing. So maybe you're someone that is going through a breakup.
Yeah.
And you know that when you go through a breakup, you have a tendency to act out. Or maybe you're going on vacation for a month and you plan on having sex with a ton of people. Like, maybe you want to go on PrEP for that period.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, there is a period, I believe it's about 7 days that you need to take it before it is effective throughout your entire body. You would want to check on that. I'm not sure if it's 7 days, but I believe it is. So I mean, there are also periods of time that people may want to go on it, because I mean, if you're in a long-term monogamous relationship and you've both been tested and you do trust each other, you know, then maybe PrEP isn't the right answer for you. I mean, then there's no reason maybe for you to go on it. I mean, but HIV, you know, does transmit when people are in relationships too. People lie, people cheat.
Yeah, that's from the dishonesty side of things. So, in your research, do you study the effects of porn on society, or is that just you look at that in your own sort of in your own time?
Well, I do look at it in my own time. so I do some research with pornography too, specifically looking at the effects that it has on body image, anxiety, depression, and then engaging in sexual risk behavior, so condomless sex. And porn is, you know, it's not as fun to research as people think. Like, people think that I'm like sitting at work, like watching porn and like clicking through and marking things. And there are people that, you know, will research porn that way to understand like how many acts happen in an average video if you just hit refresh, and how, you know, to try to determine like how violent is porn, or what acts are most prevalent. And so what I've found in my research is that porn can have an effect on anxiety and depression, and an effect on how you feel about your body. The research that I've done with it specifically looks at porn viewing among gay and bisexual men. And most of the literature that has to do with heterosexual people and watching porn has to do with violence. Yes. And rape. And there is absolutely a correlation between watching violent pornography and committing violent acts. Similarly, there is a correlation between watching pornography that doesn't include condoms and engaging in sexual acts without condoms. The thing here is that correlation does not equal causation. So it's almost the what came first, the chicken or the egg argument. So are people that are violent watching violent porn because they just like violent things? Mm-hmm. Are people that are that like to have sex without condoms watching condomless porn because that's the type of sex they like to have? Or is the porn normalizing the behavior?
Mm. Which is hard to say, right?
It's really difficult to tease apart, because you would have to do you'd basically have to do a research study where your entire sample is made up of people that have never seen porn, and then control the type of porn that they watch for a period of time, then follow them to see what sort of acts they engage in.
Yes.
It's, I mean,
because a lot of people do like to make assumptions on how porn has affected our society.
Yes. And I think that, you know, there's research to show that porn has had very positive and very negative effects. Some of the positive things are people learning about sex. People in Ireland are probably watching porn and learning about what they think sex is supposed to look like, because they have nowhere else to get information. I mean, that's what we do here in the United States too.
But I wouldn't necessarily see that as a positive though, because there's probably young, and it's going to be men that are going to, not a lot of women, young women, or maybe, look, maybe it's different now, but I mean, it's going to be young people seeing a way sex is a, you know, choking or like violent, or I don't think there's a lot of porn showing just like normal sex or like intimate sex. Or...
Yeah, absolutely. So they're, again, both positives and negatives. So like, that could be you learning what maybe sex looks like. Maybe, I mean, you could be learning like where the penis goes if you have no sex education.
Yeah, where the clitoris is for now, and lick out.
Yeah.
Or eat out, as they say here, sorry.
Yeah, so like, what do people do when they have sex? But then there is also the assumption, which is the normalizing, that like,
oh, I, you know, I've never had sex with anyone. No one's ever told me about sex, but I guess when I have sex with a chick, like I'm supposed to pull her hair and choke her, and then I'm supposed to like smack her across the face 5 times before I come, because that's what you see. Yeah. So like if you, and so here's the thing, like it's porn should not be a form of sex education. Especially if that is your only exposure to sex. If my only exposure to conflict resolution was Die Hard, then like I would act very differently. But I go about my life and I see people resolving conflict in a million different ways that don't end in violence. But if you're only, if your only exposure to sex is pornography, then you're going to think that sex is supposed to be like porn.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yeah, but they, do they have like the evidence that people's behavior has changed? Like are, do they say more young men are putting difficult expectations on women and how they should behave in the bedroom, for example?
So we have seen differences by age groups.
Okay.
And younger people are watching more porn.
Just down to access, surely, right? So easy to access now.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That would be my, and it's being produced more.
Yes.
I mean, the porn industry is growing and growing and growing. It would be impossible for someone to watch all of the porn that's ever been made in their lifetime. I think a recent statistic that I saw said that it would take like 98 lifetimes for someone to watch all of the porn that's ever been made. It's just continually growing. So there have been, I'm not sure if there have been any longitudinal studies that have followed people over time, but we definitely see differences generationally.
Right. Okay. So, and that's in perceptions and as well as behavior, or just across the board?
I believe across the board. I would have to find a paper to like specifically apart and tell you. So I'm like nervous about saying like, this is exactly what it is.
But I'd also imagine you just can't do that research yet, because when I was 13, 14, we didn't have the access to porn the way my younger brothers and sisters are going to have. So that's something that's just going to, you're going to have to wait and find out, I guess.
So you want to hear the fucked up thing that you probably haven't thought of, is not only is maybe violent pornography sending a message to men about how they're supposed to act, it's also sending a message to women about how they're supposed to act, that they're supposed to maybe enjoy being treated like that, and maybe they're not supposed to say no.
That terrifies me.
And kind of normalizing that behavior from her point of view as well.
Yeah, I think even I would consider myself sort of smart, but I was in a relationship where I'd asked him not to be aggressive, and then he was aggressive, and I thought maybe it was me. I was like, maybe I should be okay with this, until eventually when I opened up with friends, they were like, no, you can choose to just be more that's not your thing, I guess, which is, yeah. So I can relate to what you're saying. I think a lot of people will as well, a lot of women.
But the only problem is that you can't 100% say it was the porn. You know, like,
I'm not. I hadn't seen the porn, but I guess it was more that I thought, well, maybe I'm not sexually experienced enough. Maybe I should like this sort of aggression.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
And that comes down to, again, where you're like, oh, a second guessing yourself if you just don't have the knowledge or the confidence to. What would you think for like a what age do you think there should be a sexual education put into schools?
Kindergarten.
What is that in the age?
5 years old.
In the Netherlands, they actually start sex ed in kindergarten. But it starts off with like kids learning about like good touch, bad touch, and how to like ask their friends if they can give them a hug instead of just giving them a hug. So they start to learn things like consent, but in such a way of like, can I give you a hug, or would you like a hug, instead of just doing it. So it starts to get ingrained in them really early. And then in the early grade years, they start to learn about like the human body and what it does and what it's for. And they actually find that in the Netherlands, the teen pregnancy rate is much lower than the US, and STI rates are much lower, and people wait longer to actually have sex.
Do you happen to know how long they've been doing that?
I do not.
Oh yeah, no, I just had curiosity.
Yeah, because it would be really interesting to see like the kids that grew up with it in kindergarten, and where are they now, like in their 20s and 30s, and
Yeah.
And so on. So I think that, I mean, that's the issue, is that I don't think that sex education should be like a 4-week program.
Yeah.
I mean, I have students for a semester and I'm like, there's so much more that I want to tell you. And it would be great if it was just this, you know, continuing subject like math or English or whatever.
Yeah. No, I think it should be in secondary schools, at least as a subject you have to take, like the way we have English, Irish, maths. I think there should be sex education.
Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't take that much to get the information out there if you're just picking an hour a week to just mm-hmm. have a discussion about it. But I was going to ask you something there. Oh, yeah. So you know the way that often there's like a chat about the over-sexualization of children, or children are being exposed to, you know, portraying themselves in a sexual way very early, and these pressures rise. On one level, do you think that's a problem? But then on another level, do we think we're too afraid to actually expose children to conversations around sex?
Interesting. That is a very long sigh that I just took of wonderment. I mean, that's interesting, because we do definitely like sexualize people younger and younger and younger, but we don't talk to them about sex. It's like we want to sexualize people, but not have anyone ask anything about it.
Yeah.
Or not know what's going on, or not notice what's going on.
Well, I guess say more, my point would be, you have a situation where Janet Jackson accidentally flashes her boob and the whole world shuts down according to certain groups of people. But at the same time, you know, we won't like explain to them that one day they will be happy. Like, I guess it's just this sense that sex is the ultimate thing that children shouldn't be exposed to as a topic, as a thing that happens in front of them.
Yeah. I mean, how many of us have watched movies with our parents where violence is fine, but a sex scene comes on and you want to run out of the room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're fine with one and not the other.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what a comfortable way to, I mean, obviously you're talking about the way they do it in the Netherlands, which is great. But I mean, if there's parents listening, for example, like what age should they start talking to their children about sex?
I think that, I think as young as they start asking questions.
Right.
I think that as a parent, my partner has two kids. They are going to be 7 in May. And whenever they ask questions, we just answer them.
Right. Yeah.
Just honestly and openly. And it's so funny because they're exploring their own bodies now, and they love to tell us about it and then want to like show us things. And we're like, do that. You know, it's okay for you to touch yourself, but you need to do that when you're by yourself in your room. That's not something that we want to see. And they're very curious and open, and they're just like, oh, okay. And they're fine with it. And that has been really great to see. I think that you should answer kids' questions when they ask them. Mm. They're asking because they're curious. They're asking because they're thinking about it. If you just say, no, that's inappropriate, like, that's not going to make them forget about it.
Also, it's your issue. You're uncomfortable. That's
I know. You had sex to have the kid. Like, at least be able to talk to him about it. Come on. I mean, we didn't talk about it in my household at all. Everything that I learned from my friends around the lunch table, which was terrible. For the longest time, I thought that screwing meant that a guy put his penis inside the female and then, like screwed around. Spun around. Thank you. I'm like using my hands. No one can see it. Spun around, like screwing his penis into her. Wow. And that's what sex was, because that's made sense. Why would it be anything else?
Yeah, sure. Blowjobs. I thought you were meant to blow on the
penis. I've tried to do the spinny. It's very hard to spin. It's hard to get your penis in and then twist yourself around. You know, that would be quite the, the porn. Actually, 2 weeks in a row now, porn has come up a bit. Katie hasn't looked at porn. She's waiting on a link from somebody.
You've never looked at porn?
No.
Ever?
No. And I said in the last podcast, I thought I had seen porn, but it wasn't porn. It was a woman having sex with a horse, but that's what the guys had showed me as a kid. But other than that,
I mean, that's bestiality, porn. I mean, technically.
But it wouldn't even occur to me to... It never occurred to me. Oh, I guess I was afraid I'd get viruses as well, or there's that kind of... I wouldn't even know what to look at.
Wait, hang on, viruses? No, viruses like yourself or the computer?
Computer.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they tell you in Ireland. If you look at porn on your computer, you're going to get chlamydia right from the laptop.
The reason why I bring it up is actually more to do with the fact of what do you think, just in your opinion, is a healthy way to look at porn? Or, you know, what are some of the positives for, you know, somebody like, say, Katie, sexually open person, hasn't looked at porn. Is it a positive thing to introduce to your life? Or actually, if you're innocent of it, should you remain that way? Just because we're talking about the positive and the negative of porn.
That's a great question. I mean, I think because you're an adult and you have had sex and you probably have some idea of what it is that you do or don't like. Like, you could probably watch a ton of porn and be fine.
Yeah.
In one of our studies, we actually do look at things like sexual compulsivity, which is not in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Psychological Disorders. However, you know, we would think of looking at porn or any type of sex as like, how is it negatively affecting your life? So are you watching porn so much that you can't keep a job? Are you watching porn so much that you can't have a relationship, that you don't want to have a relationship, that you can't come or have an orgasm without looking at porn? Because those can be issues in people's lives. So we would look at ways to kind of get around that. And some of the positive aspects of porn, you know, I mean, you, Katie, may be able to look at porn and be like, oh, that looks like fun. I would like to explore that with a partner. Maybe I would like to try this new thing. One of the things that I think our culture really sucks at is telling women to masturbate. When you look at just using children as an example, if, you know, a little boy has his hands in his pants, it's like, we don't do that out here. Don't do that out here. Go in your room. If a girl does it, people are like, don't do that. Girls don't touch themselves like that. What's wrong with you? And then when it comes to actually having sex with a partner, I think a lot of women don't know how to give themselves an orgasm. Don't know how to have an orgasm because they haven't spent the time understanding their bodies or themselves so that they're able to. Like, you talk to any guy, he knows how to come.
Mm-hmm.
Guy can probably make himself come in a minute because he's done it so many times that, like, in a second, you can just do it. Whereas women haven't had that experience. So, like, watching porn could be helpful in that way of finding out what it is that you like, how to bring yourself to an orgasm. And then not from porn, probably, but in your real life, learning how to communicate that with a partner. Also, think about people that can't have sex. Like, people that, I mean, there are, sadly, people that are just, like, undesirable enough that, like, maybe you can't find a sexual partner. Porn is great for someone like that. They can still get off. Porn helps relax people, puts people to sleep. I mean, it releases energy. Think about, I know that if I don't masturbate for 5 days, I'll notice that I'm in a terrible mood. And then I'm like, oh, I need to jack off.
Yeah, I mean, I espouse in my show, I do a bit about consent, but I espouse in my show the unbelievable healing effects of blowing your load and finding that you just come back to your senses very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
All urgency disappears.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. Like, we've talked a lot about female masturbation and how, and I guess that was when I was coming into my A side of the podcast, just that it's, like, really important to do that because I learned that later. But, this made me think, I didn't watch a porn, but David Lynch movie with the two ladies.
Mulholland Drive.
That I've seen that, and that would have been one of the things that I was like, oh my god, I'm so turned on, I have to masturbate. And then I went into the bathroom and did it, and that kind of like escalated my, but I'm not like, I don't want to have sex with women, but I was like, ooh, that's hot. So it was like interesting where you, I guess you can like now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh, maybe I could watch porn and see other things that I might like, or like,
it's a guarantee that you're gonna have that experience.
I never thought about it. But that's really kind of
from that movie specifically.
No, but you're gonna watch porn. You're gonna get turned on.
I think that's. I think
that's why we're all doing it.
Well, I just because
just that, everybody's just watching it because they hate it.
Well, I guess I always thought that it was just some ugly or some like gross dude like banging some girl, and she's like, "Come on my face." But like that was. So
I mean, that is a lot of it.
That was so tasteful. Like, those two women that I was like, "Oh."
I mean, there is a huge variety, and there is specifically a porn company that makes quote unquote porn for women, which is softer and more sensual and a lot about pleasure and her giving consent and communicating what she wants. So, I mean, there is a, I mean, and then there's people sitting on pies, like there is a, and getting fucked by horses. Like there's a huge variety of variation. Porn.
But your opinion of porn, I mean, there's a large amount of it that is like that, but there's tons of it that isn't.
Yeah. Which is good. Then that's good about even.
And there's like window after window. You'll very quickly be able to pick the thing that you're into.
Yeah, and I'm still afraid I'm going to get a virus.
Yeah, but it's the same as watching YouTube.
You look at it on your phone. Look at it on your phone. Okay. I don't think you can get a virus on your phone. You can get a lot of pop-ups.
You're not
going to
get a virus from watching porn, Katie.
Okay.
Just so you know. Not that I'm not desperate for you to watch porn, but at the same time, your fears around porn are.
But here, so speaking to people who are like me, who just don't have a clue, what would I even Google? Just porn?
Okay, so you would go to xvideos.com, you would go to Pornhub, you would type in anything followed by porn, and it will come up.
Or just check the search history of your roommate here.
Oh no, I don't want to look at what he's into.
I think you need to do this for some YouTube content. You need to film yourself like searching for porn for the first time.
We should do it. Yeah, okay.
That would be amazing.
Okay, I'll save it.
But I also love that what you're saying about Mulholland Drive, which I've actually never seen but heard amazing
great,
things
great
about
scene. Naomi Watts, and I don't know the other actresses.
I still think about it, you know, a couple of years later. And that was in America. I watched that. I only really started masturbating in America.
They don't have that in Ireland.
We don't have masturbation in Ireland.
No, I didn't masturbate
or the movie.
No, I think my first time really getting into, I think I did it like once, or but like doing it most nights is now here. And yeah, you're so right about bad mood. I am such a chiller, nicer, easygoing person since I masturbate every... And it made my sex drive higher.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I have a question, which is quite lighthearted. Do you associate the eradication of pubic hair with porn? Because I'm desperate to know where the hell the body hair went.
Oh, I have no idea. I've never...
Because it's
I've
changed
never
in my lifetime.
About
How old are you?
I'm 34.
So it's kind of changed in your lifetime too, but perhaps you're not as aware of it. But
I am not aware of it.
In the beginning of my sexual life, there was a lot of pubic hair, and now there's hardly any.
Interesting. Are you upset about that?
No, I just was curious if that came up in your research.
Most
people anecdotally think it's porn.
I would absolutely guess that there has been research done on it. I'm not familiar with any of it, and I mean it would make sense that it might have to do with porn, because people are looking at porn before they're having sex and not only thinking like this is what sex is supposed to look like, but also this is what I'm supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. This is what my dick is supposed to look like. This is what my vagina is supposed to look like. This is how my face is supposed to look like when I come.
Yeah,
I mean, people are learning all of these ridiculous things from watching porn.
Oh yeah. nobody makes those. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I said, come on, I'm not buying
it. I didn't know what you were doing. Yeah, see, I didn't.
I'm not buying it, man.
That's the thing. I didn't learn any of those things, so I had a lot of sex. So I just do whatever face comes natural. So in one way, that's good as well, right? That I wasn't affected. Plus, I might look at it and be like, oh shit, I've been blowing people wrong for years. I don't want to learn that.
Well, you don't want to learn.
That looks like way more work than I thought it was.
Yeah. You might learn something that makes it better for you. You know?
True. Yeah, no, that's definitely eradication of pubic. I agree with Des. Like, there's something happened.
Something changed
because
in society.
I came over here, and if you guys said, "Oh, you're the first woman I've been with that has vagina hair," and then I just was like joking, like, oh, it's a European thing, but it wasn't. It was just a me thing. No one told me. I just kept someone told me at one stage just keep it neat, but other than that, no one ever told me. And they're talking to younger women when I went back home, get rid of the hair. So
just a final question. You've been so patient with us. Of all your videos, what is like the highest sort of rated one, or sort of like what do you think has been your hottest topic that you've brought up?
I interviewed a porn star about a month ago, and the second that went up, I just started getting thousands of views. His name is Bruce Beckham. He is a gay porn star, has won a bunch of adult film awards, and we just discussed like what is it like to work in the porn industry? How do people treat you when they meet you? What expectations do they have of you? What, you know, how would, what advice would you give to someone if they came up to you and said, like, I'm thinking about porn? Like, how do you right. decide? And we just had like a 20-minute conversation and people just loved it.
They ate it up.
And then I recently did one with a doctor whose research is on squirting. So we just put up a video that is all about squirting. Because people popular. Seem to be obsessed with it. Yeah, that yeah, one that one has been popular. Yeah, it kind of, you know, it surprises me. Sometimes I do a video and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I did a great video on sexual assault. Like, no one watched it. And then I'll do a video on genital warts and tons of views.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so, like, it's very... I don't know if it's the algorithm or just what maybe people are interested in and not interested in. But it's kind of very interesting to see because I'll do a video that I think is amazing. And then, no one cares. And then I'll do one that's like, I'm like, oh, I guess that's mediocre. And then people love it. And I think you probably experience the same thing doing comedy. Like sometimes you have a joke that you think is gold and no one laughs. And then you do one that you think is not your greatest joke and people like lose their minds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And same thing with videos. You put up a routine that you know is a killer. And it does nothing. And then you put up some lump of shit, like some like throwaway thing you did or like a stupid accent. And it just flies online. And you're like, why the fuck do I bother writing jokes?
Yeah.
I'll just be cute. I'll just be cute online.
Oh, God. How do you get genital warts? I'm going to have to go through
it. Skin to skin.
That's
yeah.
HPV.
Everybody has it. That. Like 90% of people have HPV. It.
They don't even have HPV. You ever seen Ali Wong's routine about no. HPV?
You love Ali Wong.
I love Ali Wong, man.
She's I heard great. You mention her on a different episode. Something about having sex with an Asian. Is
oh, it's like
a dolphin.
Are you listening
something?
To our podcast?
Yeah, I do my homework.
How do you feel about it? Just out of curiosity.
I like it. So I actually was listening to the one on your feed. And then I was waiting for a second episode and I didn't realize that you had changed the title. So then I like went through them and listened to two or three of them today. I skipped over Wendy's because I know Wendy.
Oh, you know Wendy. Okay.
And then I went through the other ones like communication and yeah. I do my homework because one thing that I hate is I'm someone that loves listening to podcasts and I hate it when guests come on shows and then like the hosts end up reiterating everything that they've talked about in the last three episodes because that person has no idea what's going on.
Oh, right.
And then for the listener, it's like, great, I'm getting a recap.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast.
Yeah. Yes. I like it a lot and I love your accent,
ooh.
Which... I don't know if that's a weird to say or not, but that's like
fine.
I love it.
No, it's fine. I got a creepy message, a little slide into the DM who actually I had to block in the end. But anyway, but one of them.
It's always fun trying to figure that out in the beginning, right? Like, is this someone I'm going to have to block or can they be a friend?
No, yeah. Eventually I was like, I better block. But he said, your voice gives my ears orgasms. And that wasn't the bad things he said. That was just one of the weird things he said. So
Katie's accent is our sort of key to actually getting American listeners, because even though we have an Irish focus, we think it's actually accessible to everybody, you know. So we're hoping that Katie's accent will bring in all the Yanks.
And I think Ireland is similar to outside of New York City. I think us being in New York City, it's like a different world, like a sci-fi book or something. We're just like 40 years in the future, and I don't think New York City represents America.
Oh, I mean, it definitely really... does not. We are living in a bubble here.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if nothing else, the last election taught you that.
Yeah.
I would like to think that it's really like a sex dating podcast for Catholics. You know, for people that grew up with shame around sex.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of people, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely had that. My mom was Catholic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we weren't raised Catholic, but my mom was Catholic and definitely like has a lot of guilt. And anger and frustration and then guilt because she's angry and frustrated and it's a cycle.
There is other religion
in general is like a lot of other religions that'll make sex feel shameless, like no sex before marriage. I'm sure there's plenty of other. I'm not gonna quote them in case I'm wrong, but
yeah, no, the born agains are the same. Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, so you can find my YouTube channel, Shit They Won't Tell You in Sex Ed, by going to sexedbythomas.com. I do a new video every 2 weeks. And then I also have a weekly LGBTQ advice column for Get Out magazine, which you can also just find all of this stuff through my Instagram, which is thomaswhitfield84. And I pretty much post everything there. So if you want to follow along, just follow me there. And
Thomas Whitfield, 84.
Yes. So Thomas and then WHITFIELD 84.
Katie, do you have anything to... We haven't been plugging our shows.
Oh.
But I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
At Katie Boyle Comic.
Yeah, put everything there. At Katie Boyle Comic.
At Des Bishop. And we, you know what? We must create a Gmail so that people can send.
Yeah, keep sending the feedback. The feedback's great.
Have them send you questions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're doing that. But we always do it through Instagram. And I feel like maybe we need to create an email so that people can like create an anonymous email and send stuff in case they're paranoid. Because when they send on Instagram, it's guaranteed we know who they are.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in fairness, people have messaged me saying, don't share my name. And we won't. If yeah, absolutely. Unless you're like, please tell everybody that
and
I
keep it
this.
Short, 200 words. Yeah. People send me questions sometimes that end up being like 4 pages, and I'm like, I don't just give me the cliff notes.
Yeah, I've had people message me questions actually, which is funny, like personal questions, which I've answered. I'm getting a lot of new friends.
Oh, personal questions about you
in relation to the like they've said, you know, we've said something and then been like, but do you think this? Oh, and then I've just responded.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's go. Good evening.
Okay, thanks for listening. And thanks to Thomas Whitfield for coming on. He's such a great man. But yeah, so hope you enjoyed the episode. And keep emailing us at contacttheshift@gmail.com. And keep DMing us. You guys are great. Thanks so much. And yeah, have a lovely week and talk to you next week. Thanks so much. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.